Because freedom and liberty are not a spectator sport. We welcome you to Movers and Shakers with Stacy Ann, broadcasting and webcasting and defending liberty guaranteed by our Constitution. And now here's Stacy Ann.
Hello, Movers and Shakers. I'm Stacy Ann. Glad to be hanging out with you today. Every once in a while, I like to dive into the archive and pull out a previously played and recorded show for you because I think the information is news that we can use on this day. So here we go.
From the capital city of the state of Oregon, it's Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning to you, friends. Glad to be hanging out with you on this Monday, the 12th day of April. Trusting you had a good weekend. I am looking at the weather forecast, and I've got a big old smile right here in the studio as it looks like all week long we're going to see that sun. Oh my goodness, this morning as we got up and got going and drinking coffee this morning, it was so fun to see all the critters outside. Of course, we like to sprinkle some seed out on the ground, and we had all kinds of critters from doves to squirrels to even a little, we have this little creature, it's probably a rat, okay, I'll just say what it is, but he's too cute. We call him Ratatouille, and he comes out and he teases the cat. You know, of course, the cat, he can't see the cat, but the cat can see him, and it was quite the adventure this morning at our place. And I just love how the trees are blooming and the birds are singing, and it's just a fun time of year. And hopefully you'll get a chance to open up your windows a little bit this week and let that fresh air in. As we all know, it's so important that we have fresh air. Speaking of fresh air, the morning show is brought to you by the Safe Air Network. Join today. Create that safe air and surface by joining the network. We have wonderful, wonderful solution to the viruses, the allergens, the molds that are going around in your air. Go to safeairnetwork.com, watch the video, and inquire for more information today. And as we look around at our news today, you're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio. We're here to encourage, engage, educate, and empower you with news that you can use. I want to share a little bit about some of the news that popped up and I thought was kind of interesting to me. Here's something that was interesting. We are in Child Abuse Prevention Month. You know, if you go down at all, down by the Capitol, you'll see there's a big tree out front with purple ribbons tied to it. And it's a reminder, you know, to be aware of what's going on as far as child abuse. And there was a case where a watchful neighbor called the police, and they said a watchful neighbor who took action to assist the child in this case. And what happened is patrol officers were recently dispatched to the report of a small child found unattended in a caller's yard. Due to the child's age, officers were unable to determine an address or a name of the parents. A police record search of the address in the area hoped officers to determine likely a residence. And they their efforts actually paid off. Although the search helped locate the child's address, records also revealed the Department of Human Services had previously made visits to this particular residence, and they were dealing with potential situation of neglect and abuse. Of course, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month and an opportunity to learn and talk about how to prevent child abuse and neglect in our community. In 2019, there were 1,238 confirmed cases of child abuse in Marion County. And in Oregon, 13,674 confirmed cases. 42% of those children victims were 5 years old or younger. And so the police department said, "We are grateful to the watchful neighbor who took action to assist the child in this case. As a community, we can help too by learning how to report child abuse or circumstances in which a child is being hurt or in danger." And last week, I heard a testimony of a grown woman in dealing with a mask issue. When she was a child, her father, to punish her, would make her put put a paper sack over her face and think about it. We just have no idea how the trauma that people we know are experiencing, and it's good that we be alert and be aware of potential harm to children in our area. And then investigators seek tips in shooting near Salem Pharmacy. And actually, this was interesting to me because it's just right around the corner, not too far away from where I live. On Saturday, April 10th at 9:15 p.m., the Marion County Sheriff's responded to a call of a person with a gunshot wound near Bayview Way Northeast State Street in Salem. Upon the arrival, deputies located a 19-year-old man with a gunshot injury. Medics transferred him to the Salem Hospital. Doctors consider the injury to be non-life-threatening. Deputies determined the shooting occurred about a half a mile away behind Walgreens store in Lancaster Drive and State Street. So if anybody has any information, the detectives are looking for more information, give them a call, 503-540-8007. And so that's right here on Lancaster Boulevard, not too far away. And then looking at Northwest Observer, and of course, I want to encourage you to go to northwestobserver.com. They have a interesting little article here, and I'll put this up on our Facebook page too. Analysis, what the court did to redistricting. And this is a hot topic right now, hot topic in Oregon, because every 10 years, you know, based on the census, they do redistricting. And that, why does that affect you and I? Well, it affects our elections. It affects how we're represented. And this is a pretty hot topic right now. And it says, we've seen this process before and seen its results. Finally, citizens of Oregon have received some great news regarding the future of their representation in the Oregon legislature and in Washington, D.C. Once every 10 years, voter representation in both the state legislature and in Washington, D.C. is revisited. Lines are redrawn based on population changes obtained by the U.S. Census. The 2020 census appears to point to significant growth in Oregon's population, growth large enough to warrant adding an additional congressional seat to Oregon's representation in D.C. The process, however, has been in limbo from the very beginning due to delay in census data availability. The Oregon Supreme Court issued a ruling that granted the bipartisan legislative request to extend the timeline to finish the redistricting process. This will issue a writ of mandamus, if I say that right, allowing the legislature to have the first chance to come up with a redistricting plan. The revised deadlines would require emergency special session and would give the legislature until September 27th to enact a redistricting plan, ensuring it becomes effective by February 1st, 2022. The opinion issued by Chief Justice Walters will keep the process from being transferred to the Secretary of State, Shamia Fagan. Secretary of State Shamia Fagan opposed the legislature retaining control of the process. However, the Oregon Supreme Court rejected her attempt to block their control, calling her legal arguments flawed. Last year, the Oregon League of Women Voters began an initiative petition aimed at ending political gerrymandering in Oregon. They sought to ask the voters to approve the creation of an independent citizens redistricting commission for reapportioning Oregon's state legislative districts. Commissioners would have been selected by county officials. 83% of Democrats, 67% of independents, and 60% of Republicans support independent redistricting, according to data shared by Norman Terrell, chair of People Not Politicians, during a recent House Special Committee on Redistricting hearing. The House Republicans agree and continue to call for the legislature to follow Washington and California by establishing its own independent redistricting commission. Oregon needs to commit to a nonpartisan and transparent redistricting process, said House Republican leader Christine Drazen. Shockingly, we're the only state on the West Coast that does not currently have an independent redistricting commission. In fact, we're behind 26 other states in the country that have or are moving to an independent system this year. Oregonians deserve better, and they overwhelmingly support independent redistricting, she concluded in a press release. What could have happened if the redistricting task could have fallen to the Secretary of State? Where the job gets done behind closed doors without transparency, we've seen this process before, and we're living, basically, its results. So I'm glad to hear this good news coming out of the Supreme Court. Again, the citizens win. And I do like that idea of an independent commission or alliance or, you know, committee, whatever you want to call them, from all of Oregon to really look at what's best for Oregonians. And again, in that effort to bring education, to empower us with news that we can use and information that we can use in our day-to-day life. I am so excited to bring my new friend. And I guess it's been a few months now since we've had him on the air, maybe about a month, six, how long ago, James, was it that you were here?
Last fall.
It's been a little bit of a season since you were here, but you have such a way of bringing history and helping us understand how relevant it is in our day-to-day lives. And I'm so glad to have you here. Let's reacquaint ourselves with the listeners. Talk to us a little bit about who you are and what you're doing.
Okay, sure. James Masnov. I'm a writer, musician, historian. I've had articles published in academic journals like Peer Insights and Armstrong Journal of History, as well as places for a general readership, including New Discourses, which was founded by James Lindsay, who mm-hmm. was behind the Grievance Studies affair with Peter Boghossian and whatnot. I've had a couple of articles published through his journal, New Discourses, and I've also had stuff published through Oregon Encyclopedia. I'm currently finishing up my master's program, and my master's thesis is actually in intellectual history of the Supreme Court. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more to it than that, but that's largely what it is. And I'm hoping maybe at some point to turn that into a book. It's already book length, and I'm generating some interest there. But yeah, I like to posit intellectual history in particular, mm-hmm. which is the history of ideas, mm-hmm. and put it in the context of the American founding, constitutional history, and legal history.
Here's something that's really interesting. Since we've been, I've had you on the air here, I've had an opportunity now, I'm like taking night classes, more or less, and doing Liberty First University with Chris Ann Hall, and I've also been doing Patriot Academy on Monday nights, following Sunday during the day with a group of people taking Patriot Academy, and it seems like all of this, I'm having these aha moments. Mm-hmm. And here's what's so incredible about our founding fathers. And the first aha moment was, I think we've been told, or we assume in a sense, that when America was birthed, it was like this grandiose idea that, America, mm-hmm. you know, and to learn that there were several hundred years
yes.
of, for instances, troubled leadership and government overreach and persecution, horrible persecution that people endured, and these learning lessons of history that were foundational mm-hmm. for our founding fathers to look upon to create this new idea of America, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And talk to us why it's so important to understand that.
Yeah, I think what's often lost on people, and this is across the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. This is true of all sorts of people, is that there's a lack of understanding in the orientation of rights. Mm-hmm. People talk about rights all the time.
Sure.
Very few people have an understanding of where rights, values, and the theory of natural rights comes from. Mm-hmm. But the United States, as we know it, would not exist otherwise. Mm-hmm. And the American founding was informed by a belief in natural rights that was inherited from England, but I would argue evolved to something far superior. Mm-hmm. What was really important in England prior to the American Revolution was what's known as the Glorious Revolution in the late 1600s. And mm-hmm. that was basically the rise of representative democracy. The mm-hmm. rise of the English Parliament was mm-hmm. really important in the 1680s. And that helped inform a century later the American Revolution. The difference is that in England, representative democracy is the peak of what's important. Mm-hmm. And in the United States, individual rights is even more important than your representative democracy. We believe in representative democracy. It's really important, but it's not actually the most fundamental or foundational. It's actually individual rights. And it's the concept that individual rights precede government.
And that's exactly the foundation building on our discussion today as we continue on, because I want to get to, in our bigger segment, I want to talk to us, to you about Jefferson mm-hmm. and what you're finding out about him and how he was so particularly important about guarding our right and our freedom of religion or not to have a religion. I love it. We're going to continue the discussion after this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM.
Returning now to more of Movers and Shakers with Stacy Ann.
Welcome back, Movers and Shakers. Hello, I'm Stacy Ann. And just a reminder that this is a pre-recorded show I dug up from our archives.
Good morning. It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day this morning.
Good morning to you. Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. You can listen to us 1220 AM, 104.3 FM, or streaming online at kslm.news. I'm Stacy Ann. It's 47 degrees right now, and it's going to get up to 66 degrees. And I should have probably worn my sandals today. Today I wore my combat boots, actually. They're my riding boots. But hopefully, I have been just so longing to get out on the motorcycle and go for a nice ride, maybe over to the coast. Maybe that's something we can do here real soon. But it's certainly beautiful weather, and I hope you go and take a walk and enjoy it today. I want to say thank you to Bill Sunderland, Country Financial Sunderland Agency, for being a morning show sponsor. Give Bill a call for any of your insurance needs or go online, sunderlandagency.com, 503-885-0789. Continuing the conversation this morning with James as we talk about kind of history, and many of you know, and I've been talking about Liberty First University and all of these opportunities for us to get reacquainted and raise our constitutional IQ and understanding our rights. Our, you know, the Declaration of Independence and our Bill of Rights and really what we talked about yesterday, James, and this is something very interesting to me. I had kind of another aha moment. And the saying, and I don't even know if I'll say it right, God's nature, nature's God, the law, right? And where do these rights come from? And it says in that we have these unalienable rights that come from God,
right.
But moreover, nature's. How am I saying that? Nature's God. Anyway, what they explained to it yesterday, was that when you just look at nature, mm-hmm. let's just pretend like we don't have a religious basis at all. But you look at nature and the rules of nature and nature's God. I think that's some closer to how it's supposed to be said. And there are rules. There are rules, and that's not written down in a manual. You just watch nature and generally,
right.
and how they have their right to their domain. They protect their domain, right? And they don't want the skunk doesn't want the bobcat to get into, you know, there's these natural instincts and
yes.
things, right, in creation that we can learn from. And so when we talk about that in just a generality, and we use that as an example, and I think it seems like here in Oregon, in my mind, more over than other places I live, people really look to nature
mm-hmm.
For inspiration and creation and their belief system, more so than they would even in a divine God kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, then you add liberty, and liberty doesn't mean you can do anything you want,
right.
whenever you want. There's a morality part of that, and that's true freedom, right? And so it's interesting to me, the part that was like the aha moment is like, wow, we've made it so complicated,
mm-hmm.
haven't we?
Yes, absolutely.
And so we got to get back to the basics,
mm-hmm.
right? So as you, in your life, you've gone to school later on in life,
mm-hmm.
and you've just found this treasure chest of history and information. Talk to us, those of us, many of us are in midlife, the value of digging deep into these treasures of our history and our founding fathers. Talk to us.
Yeah, well,
that.
I think what you touched on is really important in the Declaration of Independence when it references nature and nature's God. Mm-hmm. What Jefferson was referencing there was essentially the philosophy of John Locke, who, mm-hmm. 17th century English philosopher who was extraordinarily influential on the American founders. Not just Jefferson, but certainly him as well. And it's this idea of the state of nature, mm-hmm. and that before civilization exists, this is both an analogy, but it's also literally true. That's mm-hmm. why it's very useful. That when we live in a state of nature, meaning you as an individual out in nature with no other human being, mm-hmm. and suffering the elements and whatnot, that you have natural rights because there's no being that's going to stop you from saying what you want to say or thinking what you want to mm-hmm. think, right? And so natural rights comes from that idea that you have natural liberty just by the essence of being born. Mm-hmm. And you are born with certain faculties that is unique to the human experience. Mm-hmm. Human beings are capable of all sorts of faculties and skills that the others in the animal kingdom are not. So even if you looked at this in a sort of secular or even atheistic mm-hmm. mode, mm-hmm. it's still very useful because what it's doing is it's underscoring how special the human experience is,
yes.
that we are born with certain faculties, and we are born with those faculties because when we leave a state of nature, which is to mean we then go and live with other human beings, mm-hmm. we have natural obligations to other human beings.
Right.
And what that is to respect their rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so what John Locke said, unlike previous philosophers who said you give up your rights when you enter society.
Mm.
John Locke said, no, you give up almost none of your rights.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, you give up certain elements of your police power because we invest in a militia or we subscribe and we participate in a militia or a police force or a military.
Mm-hmm.
But that is to protect the society at large. So the only rights we're in any way compromising or giving up are those that completely protect and strengthen everybody.
Right.
Otherwise, all of our rights remain intact. And then when we come to ideas of civil rights, right to an attorney, right to a jury by trial,
mm-hmm.
those are informed by the natural rights that require us to respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so even civil rights, when they're legitimate, are based on natural rights.
I love that order.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much a order, a proper order. And when I think about in nature, in creation, you know, a nice little, you know, animal has his little domicile, you know, and then a threat comes.
Mm-hmm.
They're certainly going to, they're friendly with others as long as they're, you know, but if you're going to threaten them, but then they also help each other out too, you know, and so it's a great revelation in my mind and something that I've known, but I think the struggle, and I want to get into it when we get through this other break, I want to talk about the freedom of religion.
Yes.
And the struggle that I've experienced in my experience as a faith-filled person of those who have faith thinking that it needs to be a certain way, that America needs to be a Christian nation,
mm-hmm.
right? And if we just were a Christian nation, then all our problems would be solved. And I want to talk a little bit about some new revelations that in my mind of our founding fathers as we move forward. I think it's going to be helpful to you. Our listeners, we'll be back after this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hanging out with James today. We'll be back after this.
Hey, yeah, you. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. Yeah, I like to move it.
Returning now to more of Movers and Shakers with Stacey Ann.
Welcome back, Movers and Shakers. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. And just a reminder that this is a pre-recorded show I dug up from our archives.
Hello, good morning, how you doing?
It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day.
Good morning to you, Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. We're continuing the conversation. James is in the studio with me, and we, you know, I kind of set it up last segment about, you know, talking about the natural law, nature's law, and talking about why it's so important to dig into history to understand where we're at today and how it applies in our day-to-day life. And oftentimes I've heard this whole separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. I've heard that all my life, that, oh, church needs to stay private. Your faith and your religion needs to stay in your home. And don't bring it to work. Don't bring it to school. You need to, you know, in your church. And when I dig into the founding fathers, and again, like I said, the 700 years prior to the idea of America being birthed, a lot of those four instances were based on persecution and difficulty that people had, communities had experienced and walked through. And the founding fathers came up with this idea, and Jefferson in particular. He was a great defender of the freedom of religion. And the idea that we didn't need one religion telling us how the do's and don'ts, and the whole idea of the separation of church and state really was expressing the fact that, you know, people, whether they're want to believe or don't want to believe, or whatever they believe, they just need to have the right to do so, right?
Yes, absolutely. And Jefferson's important because he was a big defender of the freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Jefferson who coined the term separation of church and state. It was from a letter that he wrote to the Danbury Baptists. It's so often misused and taken out of context. And even when it's used in the right context, it's simply Jefferson's view
mm-hmm.
of the First Amendment. It's not the actual standard.
Right.
And even in that context, Jefferson would not have been against public expression of religion in the town square or in public. People have, especially over the past century, maybe the past 50 years especially, have confused freedom of religion with freedom from religion. You mm-hmm. and I were talking about this mm-hmm. off the air, and thinking that because maybe religious expression makes them uncomfortable, they shouldn't have to see it in the public. But that's not what freedom of religion is.
Exactly.
Freedom of religion, more specifically, the First Amendment, it's two clauses. It's the free exercise mm-hmm. and the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
There will be no establishment of religion, which means no state. Well, when it was written, it meant the national government. There will be no official religion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that means. And then the free exercise of means nobody's going to stop you if you do want to practice your religion. That's simply what it means. And this idea of separation of church and state has been completely misconstrued.
Absolutely. And something else that's been misconstrued in history, and this is just an example, is when Paul Revere was on his ride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the British are coming. The British are coming.
Right.
Hello. They were British.
Exactly.
Everybody was British.
Yeah.
You know, it was more the regulars, right?
Yes.
The regulars, the people from overseas. They were the enforcers.
Yeah, the regulars or the redcoats.
Mm-hmm, or the redcoats. And so just how we can, what is it called? The Mandela effect?
Yes.
It's kind of how these things we grab as truth and they're not, how did that happen? How did mm-hmm. we suddenly believe this as fact? And,
right.
and it really, it's like, where did this shift happen, right? And so with that, I want to encourage you, friends, that the whole intent was, and what I love about this and digging deep into this stuff of our history, is that our founding fathers, man, they were smarty smart. And they were not only just book smart, they had practical smarts. And again, I'm reminded that the culture back then, it took a lot to produce something,
mm-hmm.
a lot of effort, a lot of resources, and it was more agricultural based, right? So it was really easy to look at nature and the fact of nature in our day-to-day lives. I think as we've gotten more modern in a sense, and the conveniences of, you know, going to the grocery store and getting the milk instead of milking the cow in the morning, mm-hmm. you know, those kinds of things, it softened us.
Yes.
And it softened us in the ability to think for ourselves. It softened us in the ability of our own independence and our own particular way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the Christian faith, I will say, I call them bumblebee Christians. They go from, you know, this little devotional book and this little, you know, sermon and this little Christian song and all of that and take it as gospel.
Yes.
And even though it's reflective of the gospel, it's not the Bible directly.
Right.
And one of my favorite sayings in my Pastor Brent back in the day is, I'm not here to feed you. I'm here to read the menu. You go eat yourself.
That's
meaning, you know, you go and dig in and get your revelation.
Yep.
And that's the same with history. We've got to understand where these founding fathers were at.
Yeah. I was just going to say that with history, it's just as true. And of course, I believe in the American system, so mm-hmm. I am for market economies, I'm for capitalism, mm-hmm. Consensual trade and entrepreneurialism. There has been a byproduct that is not necessary to that culture, but it has grown, which is that we outsource everything. Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about milking the cow, and now mm-hmm. people get their milk from the store. There's not inherently something wrong with that, but we've built a culture where we outsource everything, including our faith, mm-hmm. what we should believe in, our history education.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, when we don't empower ourselves by finding the knowledge for ourselves, and this has to do with religious faith and also history education, when you expect someone else to do it, including your public schools,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not specifically attacking public schools because this is true of so many things.
Right.
Part of the deprivation or part of the problem with history education as we know it right now is that kids are not told about natural rights theory.
Mm-hmm.
They're not learning that the United States was built on a philosophy of natural rights where your rights come first and government comes next.
Right.
And if people don't understand that, but then they're told a little bit about the Constitution and a little bit about the history and a lot that they don't say,
mm-hmm.
then it's not all that surprising that people don't have a good understanding of their history or their governmental system.
Mm-hmm. Which leads to the chaos and the confusion that yes. we're in. And then when someone says, I'm standing up for my constitutional rights, somehow then they're a white supremacist. I mean,
right, exactly.
It's like they jump all over the place. It's
yeah.
like, whoa, where did you get that? You know, and the other thing in history that's really compelling is the number of African American folks in history that played a part in building America that it's never highlighted.
Oh, absolutely.
And in the women in history,
yes.
strong women in the founding of America that have been left out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole wokeness recently of, we got to whatever, it's not, it's good that we stay aware. But when we talk about unalienable rights and we talk about nature and nature's law, again, all of us are created equal. We all have that opportunity. And I would throw this out. My philosophy is, since Obama, and because of trying to divide our nation, this whole recent wokeness, and it's divisive. It's mm-hmm. I was raised growing up, I didn't see color. I lived in California and I moved up here to Oregon, and everybody, I was raised that way, and in my educational experience, and so this whole idea, because I'm white, somehow I'm racist.
Yeah.
By the color of my skin I'm offended by that. I'm sorry.
Well, the whole philosophy of anti-racism is absurd because all you have to do is apply it to something else. And this is a fresh thought. I actually had not thought about it this way until right now,
okay.
but I think this is a good comparison. Imagine if it were murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody's saying, it's not enough that you don't murder, you have to be anti-murder. Mm-hmm. That's a ridiculous thing to say. It's
right.
like, no, it's enough that I just don't murder.
Right.
It's enough that I'm not racist.
Exactly.
I don't have to fly a banner and talk about my anti-racism all the time. It's a shortcut to thinking, and whether it's, the anti-racist nonsense or that everything is sexist, or everything is Russian, or mm-hmm. everything is racist, which, it's like those three things the past few years, everything's racist, or Russian, or sexist, or mm-hmm. some combination thereof.
Mm-hmm.
People can only buy into that if they have no real sense of history, and no real sense that, well, actually, our entire system is based on the idea of equality. Equality first in the eyes of God. You're mm-hmm. born with all the rights of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the philosophy that informs all of this. And then we build a legal system to follow that. Of course that falls short because it's made up of human beings.
Right.
But that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And to when you're talking about these figures, whether it's African Americans or women, now historians are, it's part of our job to highlight those kinds of figures that have often been overlooked. But if you go into history, it doesn't have to be the woke stuff that was published yesterday.
Exactly.
There's decades and even centuries of history, whether it's Abigail Adams, mm-hmm. Benjamin Banneker, mm-hmm. During the founding, Frederick Douglass. Mm-hmm. We have these really interesting figures, and we're always finding more and discovering how important their roles were. So that part of it is really, really crucial. But the sort of woke crowd is acting like it's
new revelation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the difficulty is, even when we talk about slavery, mm-hmm. you know, cultures for generations, doesn't matter what the color of the skin, slavery, even back to the Bible, you know, slavery was something mentioned and talked about in Bible,
right.
Bible times. And so we're going to continue. We've got some more things to dig through here in this next segment. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I want to remind you, this will be saved up on our website as a podcast. Share this link with your friends and family. Let's all get better together. We'll be back after this.
Returning now to more of Movers and Shakers with Stacey Ann.
Welcome back, Movers and Shakers. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. And just a reminder that this is a pre-recorded show I dug up from our archives.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a good morning.
Wake up to a brand new
You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann. Thank you for tuning in today. Our show is brought to you by the Safe Air Network. Don't forget to join us, safeairnetwork.com, making sure that your air and your surfaces are sanitized and clean, and it's our way to open back up Oregon, safeairnetwork.com. Continuing the conversation, you know, James, we were talking about slavery, and I just had a phone call, and just a reminder, you know, of course, I believe in God and I believe in Jesus and I'm a Christian. And so my faith, you know, I love reading the history of the Bible, and I'm reminded of the story of Joseph in the Bible, mm-hmm. and which is in history, and how he was enslaved, right? And his brother sold him into slavery. And because of that process, he was positioned to down the road to actually save the nation, you know, by that. But it started with slavery. And the concept of the phone call that I just got was, because of, you know, slavery, people were moved around, you know, and introduced to, you know, you think about the slaves that were moved here, they were introduced to Christianity, you know, and so that the word talks about how the Bible talks about moving groups around, and at the end time calling people together and all of that. And so there's a divine, even those who don't believe necessarily in Christianity, but in general, looking at nature, will see that there's an order to things, mm-hmm. correct? And so in slavery, I even think of my Irish heritage. Many, many Irish folks came over to the United States as indentured servants, right?
Yes.
They came in agreeing to be slaves for so amount of time to pay back for their costs to get here, right?
Yep. Yep.
So talk to us a little bit about slavery in our American history and even prior to that.
Yeah, the indentured servitude began prior to and then ran kind of parallel to slavery for a long period of time, but was eventually done away with because slavery was, you know, for the slave owners, it was a much better option. Because what would happen with indentured servants is that they would usually have their trip to America, mm-hmm. paid for, and they would be indentured for usually somewhere around 7 years, mm-hmm. could be as many as 10 to 14, 15 years, but usually seven. And in that time, they would learn a trade. And then once they had served their indentured servitude, they would repeat the process and they would pay for somebody else, and then they would have an indentured servant. And so you started having this master and apprentice mm-hmm. system mm-hmm. that developed, which actually empowered a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But the institution of slavery was actually a threat to that and overtook that. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting thing. I did want to mention to you, though, this fact about slavery in the United States that not a lot of people know. I want to ask you if you know who the last people were to own slaves in the United States.
Who the last people were?
Any guess?
To own slaves in the United States. I don't know the answer to that.
Meaning geographic United States, North America. Native Americans.
Oh, boy.
So the Chickasaw Nation refused to get rid of their slaves after 1865 when the United States did. Now, they had every right to. They didn't have a right to in terms of human rights, but
sure.
In terms of legality, because the Chickasaw Nation, and there was a number of nations that at the time that were like this, they had developed the practice of slavery, and I'm talking about they owned African American slaves. I'm not talking about, you know, fellow Chickasaws or other Native Americans. Because the Chickasaw was a sovereign nation, they didn't have to abide by the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, right?
Got it, yeah.
And so it was only by treaty with the United States in 1866, a year after the United States got rid of slavery, that the Chickasaws got rid of their slaves.
Incredible.
Now, you don't learn that in school. And I think one of the reasons is that there's a movement to act as though slavery was unique to whites, to white Americans, to Euro-Americans. But that is evidence right there that actually, a year after the United States got rid of it, the Chickasaw were trying to hold on to their slaves. And that's not to demonize anybody.
No.
It's just to show how complicated this history is.
It is a complicated history. And again, I hate that people are trying to make winners and losers in a sense and really water it down and not look at the rich history and the multifaceted parts of it that we can learn and grow from, truly. And so this latest work that you did, and we didn't really get into it very much, but we talked about Jefferson. Talk to us about this paper and this resource where people can go and read more and discover more.
So if they go to my Substack, which is historykillers.substack.com and subscribe. They will have access to all of these articles. The newest one that just went up today, I gave you a preview of it so we could talk about it. It's all about Thomas Jefferson in the 1780s and how he fought a sort of two-front battle for religious freedom, but religious freedom in the sense of he didn't want theocrats.
Right.
Christians in Virginia and Muslims in the Mediterranean affecting governmental policy.
Right.
And so what's interesting about my work with this article, which is the newest one, is that historians have generally dealt with one of these stories or the other.
Not together.
And not together, even though this was happening at the exact same time. So at the moment that Jefferson got his statute for religious freedom passed in Virginia in the mid-1780s, which he thought was one of his top three biggest accomplishments of his life. It's one of the things that's listed on his gravestone. At that very moment, he was minister to France in Paris, and he was dealing with the Barbary Pirates, as they were called, the North African states, capturing American vessels in the Mediterranean and taking those sailors as slaves.
As slaves.
And when he asked the minister to the ambassador from Tripoli, one of the North African states, why are you doing this? The ambassador said, because you are infidels. And the Quran says we're allowed to do this. And Jefferson was appalled. So he had just won religious freedom for his home, Virginia.
Right.
And now he's dealing with a different form of theocrats, a much more unruly form of theocrats in the Mediterranean.
Incredible.
So that's what the article is about.
So so again, here we are, how many years later?
It's an ongoing American story.
Some of these pirating, we don't call it pirating anymore, but some of these similar types of conflicts nationally and internationally, and that's why we need to learn from our history.
Yes.
And so when we give an account or we give our opinion or we give our thoughts on something, we can back it with substance and be able to show people, go discover for yourself.
Right.
So they can be enlightened, right?
That's exactly
and
right.
Truly appreciate your time here today. And I do think, friends, we're talking about having like a history day every month. What do you think of that? I think it would be a great time for us to gather together and talk through these issues. And maybe we could even do some call-in and stuff in the future and get people to ask questions. Again, how can they find your information?
Historykillers.substack.com.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time. And friends, there's lots we can be discussing. And I just want to encourage you for yourself. Come on out to Liberty First University on Wednesday night at 6. We'll do a little advocacy training. And then at 7 is Chris Ann Hall's Liberty First University. And you're familiar with Chris Ann Hall. You knew
Definitely.
Her before she got so
She's
popular.
Great.
Yes. And then get involved, get engaged. If you need more information about that, send me an email, Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at KSLM.news. Grab this link, and it'll be up on our website this afternoon. Grab it and share it with your friends. Thank you, James, for your time.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. God bless you, listeners. God bless you, friends. Remember, go out and give a smile and pull that mask down. Let people see your beautiful smile and enjoy the sunshine today. God bless you, and God bless the USA.
There ain't no doubt I love this land.